Welcome to After the Buzzer, the latest edition. We are back in the world headquarters in the man cave. Just had an emotional reunion with Jasper the dog, the staff dog here.
The staff, yeah.
And After the Buzzer.
The official pet of After the Buzzer.
so it's good to be back. I've been on the road so much lately covering high school hoops during this time slot. So anyway. My name is Mike Gross, and alongside is Gordy Jones, and we're going to go without a guest this week because things just didn't work out, but also because we have a laundry list of things to discuss, and literally, Gordy just, I know it's not a visual medium, Gordy just held up the laundry list, and we're going to just plow through it because there's a lot going on right now, and there's a lot coming up in the next couple weeks with, you know, the NCAAs. All you know, the NBA stuff. Baseball is on the way to being back. And that's one of the things we're going to get to. But we start with the thing that has been sort of foremost in my work lately, which is the high school basketball postseason around these parts. District playoffs ended last weekend. State playoffs now one round in. And I find this to be one of the most amazing and baffling sports events every year. The way the brackets play out, these crazy inequities in matchups, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, Gordy, you have a lot of experience with this stuff.
Yeah, too. I mean, I was surprised. This is a game you covered. LS losing to Penn Hills 62-39. Penn Hills was the seventh seed coming out of the Whippeal, and as their coach told you, that was a little misleading.
Yeah.
That was probably not really reflective of how good a team they were, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they took apart a 27-0 team. I was surprised not only that they lost, but, you know, to that margin. I mean, what can you tell us about
that
game?
Well, a couple things. First of all, for those of you who have not been paying attention to high school basketball, Lampeter-Strasburg is this they've been the story of our season around here.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting, compelling team that not a lot of size, not crazy athletic, but really high skill level. They've been they have four guys that are shooting that have 50 or more threes, and they all shot 40 more percent from the 3-point arc. They averaged over 9 3-pointers a game. Just a really fun team to watch, and this Ty Burton, the point guard, a sophomore, is I think he's the best player in our league, and he's really an intriguing kind of character. But anyway, they were 28-0 and lost in the first round of the state playoffs to a team, as Gordy said, it was a 7 seed from out west. A couple things. Number one, they're in the class that they're in, 5A. Mm-hmm. The western part of the state seems strong in that class for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
5A seems stronger than 6A in out in the West. And I think we saw some evidence of that last night when the 6A first-round games were played. This team was long, Penn Hills. They were long. They were athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 minutes into the game, LS was doing its thing. They weren't making threes, but they were running their stuff, getting the wing, getting to the rim. Penn Hills was playing straight man-to-man. Their coach called timeout. And I talked to him after the game, and he said, we didn't really think we could guard them man-to-man. We're normally a man-to-man team. We don't feed. But they went to a trapping half-court press,
mm-hmm.
kind of a run-and-jump deal. And they had enough length that just LS did not respond to it at all. They had enough length and athleticism. They got to the rim a fair amount. Shots were blocked.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of blocked shots. Then LS, I thought, got a little gun-shy.
Hmm.
They did a great job. It was hard for them to throw over the press because of the size. And then Penn Hills did a great job. And when they did, close it out to those shooters. And LS really, really struggled offensively. I thought they guarded them well enough that they could have won. That part of it was okay. But offensively, they just really kind of melted down. It was a shock.
That is a shock to me. I was really surprised by it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it can't be the first time somebody's tried that against LS this year, right?
No, it's not. It's not the first time. It really isn't. You know, in retrospect, I think, for example, Hempfield maybe should have done it a little more than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have that. Danny Walk is a very good coach, and they have that in their arsenal. And they have the overall size. Maybe they should have. They played LS in the league championship.
And it was a really close game.
Yeah, it was a close game. It went right down the wire, and our boy Ty made a three at the end.
A highly contested. That's. I mean, the highlights that I've seen, I've not seen him play a complete game, but the highlights I've seen, the shots that he makes, are some of them are really hotly contested, and he makes it anyway.
It was interesting. I wrote a column about this thing with them shooting all these threes, and I talked to Seth Beers, who was a point guard for LS a couple years ago. He's now at Lancaster Bible College, and he said when Burton came home, he was in Florida at IMG Academy, they just started working out together all the time. And one of the things they worked on was, because he's small, his ability to drive off the dribble and pull up and get and elevate and get the shot off. And he's really good at that. He's really good at that.
Shooting off the dribble. He's an exceptional talent. He's only a sophomore, so next year is when the recruiting is really going to ramp up for him. So this will be interesting to me to see who really takes an interest in him, because as you said, he's not a huge kid. What is he, 5'10" most?
5'10" at the most, yeah.
So I mean, what does that mean? Where does he project? I don't know. I mean,
he has one offer. It's from Manhattan in the Metro Atlantic, and that league that Iona and Ryder and Fairfield and Siena, that bunch.
The Jasper is named after the official pet of
Africa. That's right. That's right. Can't be a coincidence. Can't be a coincidence. So, you know, I mean, if he ends up landing there, that would be
fine.
That
seems like a pretty good fit off the top. I mean, I'm sure that Casey Stitzel is like saying, wait a minute,
That's right. Casey Stitzel, even though he likes big guys, and certainly the team that they have right now, is their overall size and athleticism is the key to what they've done. He's got to be on Casey's radar.
He's got to be. I mean, because it's like, I could picture him playing there like right now, today.
Yeah, that's right. And,
this will be interesting to me. I mean, if he grows 2 inches, maybe that makes a big difference in his recruitment, too.
Yeah, I think so. I think from 5'10 to 6 foot is a big, and you hope it happens. I just hope it happens for him, because he's a nice kid, and it's interesting to watch his teammates interact with him, because it looks to me like he's connected to them. It's not like he's above them or he's carrying them or anything.
I really love that.
That's not the dynamic at all. But at the same time, I think they look at him and they're kind of entertained by him.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
They kind of get a kick out of him. You know what I mean?
I like that, because the things I wanted to mention was, I mean, I've heard so much about this Philly pride thing, and just because I'm so totally disconnected from it, I wonder how attuned he is to LS and how much, you know, his heart is over here with Philly pride. But obviously, from what you're saying, that's not an issue.
And he said after the game, I talked to him after the game, after they lost the other night, and he was very upset. He was almost in tears and everything. And he said, this is the greatest team I've ever played on.
Good for him.
And, you know, he's been playing AAU since he's like 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I asked him when he made the game winner in the AAU championship game, I said, have you ever made a game winner before? He said, yeah, I think I did. I had like a runner in the lane when I was 8 or 9. And
of course, as we all have.
I feel you, man. And the other thing is, from that league championship game and also from the district final, it's his AAU coach and a lot of his AAU teammates are at the games.
They're, I like that. So it's all a big conglomerate.
I guess it is. Yeah, I guess
I
it
like
is.
That and because because I've seen so much about this Philly pride thing. That's where my thought process has often been, is like, how much of his heart is in one place as opposed to the other? But apparently his heart is big enough that it's in both places.
Yeah, I think his heart is big enough. That's a good way to say it. And this Philly pride thing, they are, I mean, it seems like they have like 18 teams, so I'm not really sure what it all means. I mean, when they have these big events at Spooky Nook, there's like 6 Philly Prides in there, you know. There's an AAU team in Philly that plays in that big national Nike circuit where they travel. They're called Team Final. But Philly Pride is sort of, you know, the next step down. Like Mo Bamba played for Team Final.
Oh, okay.
They like have a media day.
Oh, of course they do.
And they go play in these events, and you know, Calipari and Jay Wright or and Bill Self in the stands watching. You know, that's the level that that's at.
Okay. So anyway. I wanted to mention, too, that you, another game you covered, and this is, we're speaking on Thursday, and this would have been last night, you saw Warwick beat Mount Lebanon 54-40, a game in which Warwick had a 30-8 lead. Yeah. So good for them. I mean, but this gets back to what you're saying before, how 6A out west, not as good as 5A. Yeah. Obviously, that was...
Yeah, and the way things are now, when Philadelphia joined the PIAA, they had to reconfigure the tournament to reflect that influx of new teams, obviously. Mm-hmm. So District 3, in a lot of cases, not every case, not every class, but we got moved out west. Mm-hmm. So the District 3 and 6A... Our teams are mostly playing in that, it's not really the East-West anymore, but that half of the bracket where the WPIAL teams are and such. And I looked at the bracket, I remember saying to some people, I tried to tell some people.
Thank you for that.
I think Warwick got a better bracket than Reading did.
Wow.
And Reading beat Warwick for the district championship. And Reading is really good.
Yes,
really
they often
crazy
are.
Crazy athletic, and they even have some injuries. And still are a monster. But, and, you know, other like Central Dauphin, which Warwick beat in the districts, they're still playing. It's so strange the way these matchups work out. And part of it is LS just got not necessarily a really super tough opponent, but an opponent that could do something that they couldn't.
The matchup wasn't good for them.
It's endlessly baffling. It's interesting, but it's like you can't even get a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to figure it.
So it'll be interesting to see how things play out for Warwick, because they've had a nice season, and Tate Landis is obviously a really good player. So we'll see how that works.
And the other team that has a chance, I think, is Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, don't even get me started about that bracket. I mean, that's just crazy. They're in there with like this math, civics, and sciences charter school.
I love some of the names, by the way.
Philadelphia. My favorite from this year's field, string theory.
Yes.
There's a school called String Theory.
I mean, who's their coach? Sheldon Cooper?
Yeah, they're bringing it down. They're bringing the theoretical physics down. And there's an Obama. There's a school that's just called Obama.
Of course. One guy comes out.
There's a Roberto Clemente. Roberto Clemente High School.
As there should be.
There's a high school of the future.
So are they actually playing in this?
I almost did a top 10, like, best team names in the state playoffs. I should do that. Maybe just tweet it or something. But anyway.
Yes, go there.
Yeah, Columbia has a chance, but they've got an unbelievably tough bracket, and I don't want to do 20 minutes on that.
Okay.
But it's they're a fun team that I hope can plan for a while.
And another team has had a really nice year.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, too, that Bob Durr has announced his retirement after a 49-year career at Warwick. 43 of those years as the field hockey coach. He's won multiple state titles and is a Hall of Famer. He's a Kirkner Award winner. I do not know Bob, but everybody speaks highly of him. I don't know if you've crossed paths with him.
I have done a little bit of talking to him over the years, and it's really a gentleman. One of those guys that's the first word that you think of, a gentleman. He's coached field hockey and wrestling and track. Now he's known for field hockey.
Correct.
Although obviously he didn't play field hockey, so it's a sport that he had to learn in order to coach, which I always think is interesting. And he has been like the national field hockey coach of the year, high school coach of the year. He's very high, I don't know exactly, but very high on the all-time list for career wins.
Mm-hmm.
And this long career, if you add up all his seasons in coaching, it's, what is it, 70-something?
Yes.
It's insane.
I know it's 43 in field hockey, 29 in track, and I think 8 or so in wrestling.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm off on that last one, but that's a lot of
a
lot of late dinners.
It's been so low profile.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is fairly recently, we made a big deal out of National Signing Day.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to different, like I went to Hempfield in the morning and Warwick in the afternoon. And and this particular year, he was sending like 6 field hockey players to college, and 5 of them were going to Division I. They're going to Syracuse. They're going to Iowa. You know, amazing.
Yeah.
And I started talking to him about this. You know, you ever think about your legacy? I mean, how does this make you feel? He started crying. He was so, God love him. Yeah, yeah. It was such a like a touching conversation, because just his straightforward love with working with kids is so evident.
I love that, because you can tell his heart's in the right place.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? 'Cause he's not in it for personal glory. I mean, I'd be in it for personal glory to some extent, you know. I mean, not to rip, for example, this is not a criticism of, for example, Mike Williams.
Right.
But he's in it to kick some ass, right? I mean, not that Bob Dur isn't in it to kick some ass, but you know what I mean?
I understand.
There's very little, individual glory in this, and you said it. He's doing it for the right reason.
Yeah, I really love that. So we go from there to the fact that the Major League lockout is apparently coming to an end. I guess there's some I's to dot and some T's to cross, but that is the news today. And, we've talked about this before. and it's like, I've reached the point in my life where I need baseball for June and July. Other than that, I'm good. I mean, I actually do like playoff baseball, but it's sort of one of those things. It's on in the background. I don't think I watch a full game anymore. I'm sure I'm not in a minority about that they kind of drag, yeah, et cetera. But partly because they've done such a poor job of managing it and they seem intent on slitting their own throats, it seems like it's really kind of lagged behind the other sports as far as its wide appeal.
When I first started hearing about that this might end, there might be a labor issue this time, what I was hearing was the players are getting 43% of their revenue and they want 50%. Mm-hmm. That was 2 months ago, and I don't think I've heard anything about that since then. I it's very unclear to me what business side of this. I think they did something for the younger players in terms of minimum salary.
Yeah, I think that was a sticking point. Yeah.
There's arbitration eligibility thing, yeah, which that's every time they do, sure, this. That's something that and there's apparently going to be some kind of an international draft, which, yeah, why was the draft not international before?
I don't know, because that's where I don't know what the percentage is, but a large percentage of the players are international players, and that's been the case for several years,
yeah,
now. So
yeah,
why is that not? Yeah. Why was that not ever?
I don't know.
But at any rate, it is back, and I guess that's sort of good. So I mean, you know.
Yeah, and the thing you have to bear in mind is that baseball still generates. Now you have to cut the pandemic out of almost,
sure,
all, yeah, human endeavor. You know,
right,
certainly economic stuff. But if you take that away, baseball still generates a lot of revenue. It's still they're not going broke.
No.
And every owner who wants to could sell his team tomorrow for enough money to keep his family flush for generations and generations and generations,
correct,
to come. That is all the franchise valuation is the ultimate trump card that you can't be sympathetic to the owners,
no,
because of that.
No, I really have very little patience for it when there's a labor disagreement in any sport and fans want to blame the players first. Well, what about the other side of the equation?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I guess it's because the other people are so often faceless people that are just up in some luxury box and you really can't identify,
yeah,
them, whereas your heroes are right in front of you, like, you know, on a cereal box or a commercial or,
yeah,
whatever, in addition,
yeah,
to the,
right,
playing of the game.
That's
games.
Right. And it's hard for people who aren't thinking about it too deeply, and we can't ask them to think about it too. You can't really ask most people to think about this very deeply, but it's hard for people who don't think about it very deeply to say, this clown's hitting .247 and he's making $11 million dollars
such
a year.
Such a simplistic view. So simplistic.
And he's complaining that it's unfair. He's complaining that he's getting a raw deal.
Yeah, and the counter argument is that is what the market will bear. And the other thing is he has a limited window to earn whatever he's earning.
That's right.
So,
and nobody says that about Harrison Ford.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That, right? That's a great comparison.
Yeah. Nobody ever says that about Tom Cruise.
Yeah. That's a perfect comparison.
So, you know, and the other thing is nobody gives a shit about Bruce Springsteen's record company, which is like the equivalent of the owners, right?
did not think we would be mentioning Bruce Springsteen tonight, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Okay, and it was a big week for NFL news too. Aaron Rodgers has apparently agreed to a 4-year, $200 million extension with the Packers, although he insisted on Twitter, and we all know he's big on credibility. I roll my eyes here that he has not signed anything yet. Also, Russell Wilson was traded to Denver for a King's ransom. And Carson Wentz traded to the Commanders, meaning he'll have to come to Philadelphia once a year from now until whenever.
Yeah,
so,
that's right. That's
so
right.
Take those in any order you like.
Well, first, let's say I got a kick out of Aaron Rodgers tweeting and being all emphatic about, I haven't signed anything. When the reports were, they've agreed to terms.
Yeah.
I mean, people act like that stuff doesn't matter. It does matter. That's what it said. It said agreed to terms. And the other thing is, does anybody doubt that it's going to happen?
I think not.
It's done. It's going to happen. I mean, we all know it's going to happen. People who act like they don't believe in the media, but without even a conscious thought that they're thinking it, they know that's true. They know that report is essentially accurate. Anyway.
Yeah. This is a tangent which we're big on. The other day I was writing a piece for the company which I now work for, which is Non-Sports Endeavored, and they said that there was some survey of trust. People trust more in business than they do government or media, which is like, why would you trust business is my question. I get that the media gets slammed all the time, and I get that government's all over the place, but why would you trust business?
I think there's a perception in that's very widespread in this country right now that, well, at least they're open about it.
Well, no,
they're not open about it, but we know they're trying to screw you for profit. I think that's what people think. I think that's an element of the Trumpism thing.
Okay, that's interesting.
You can't possibly think he's not full of crap, but he's openly full of crap.
So we appreciate his. Okay,
We can't say we appreciate his candor because God knows it's not candor. But whatever it is, I think it connects somehow with a vast swath of the American public.
Well, okay, I can
believe me when I tell you I'm not defending it.
No, thank you, yeah. And nor would I.
You know I'm not defending it. Yeah.
But anyway, but Rodgers was very, as you said, was very emphatic about that. But I mean, the indications were there all along that they wanted to bring him back. One of them being that they brought back his favorite quarterback coach, Tom Clement, who came out of retirement at age 68, and the indications were then, well, he's not coming out of retirement to coach Jordan Love.
Yeah, right. You know, so that's true. I didn't really even think that until you said it, but obviously that's true.
And that happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So this was sort of ramping in this direction. And they also, you know, signed Davante Adams to, the
franchise tag.
So that's two pretty big pillars in place for them. So we'll see how that works. Well, let me ask you this. This is a point Tony Kornheiser made. Rodgers has won one Super Bowl in his career. Does he need to win another to get validation? In my mind, no, because he's still on that one pantheon of quarterbacks. But at the same time, you know, somebody that good, you got to think that he's got to win another one at some level, don't you?
A minute ago, we were talking about perception, no matter how absurd it is, to some extent, you have to take it seriously because it's perception and it can't
win. Yeah.
That's what this is.
It's
the same thing, you know, especially in football. There's so many moving parts. I would say this, though, about Rodgers, and I would kind of a little bit say this about Peyton Manning, too.
Yeah.
Their performance in the biggest moments.
Agreed.
Has left, and it's happened often enough.
Mm-hmm.
That it leaves, it's a little bit of a down.
I agree.
A downer on their legacy and in an objective assessment of their careers.
I agree. Rodgers is 11-10 in the playoffs, and it's like You know, but some of that was, you know, you could argue that this year was a little bit fluky. Their special teams just completely imploded. At the same time, he only put up 10 points in a playoff game.
I'm worried if you're going to talk about a player's legacy, I want to talk about how he played. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the team result, how he played. And I think in Manning's case and in Rodgers' case, how he played in a fairly substantial sample size now of huge moments.
Agreed.
Has some impact.
I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you know where my loyalties lie. So yeah, it does make me pretty crazy. It's like, you know, we go back to, you know, the end of the San Francisco game when it was still tied and he had Alan Lazard standing in the middle of the field and he locked in on Devontae Adams because, I mean, I guess I get that as good as he is, but.
And he doesn't lock in. Normally.
No, that's the thing.
I
remember the play. You could see from the moment he took the snap that he was going to one person and one person only. And meanwhile, Alan Lazard there's nobody within 20 yards of him.
Now, I feel obligated now to point out the other side of this, which really drives me nuts, which is ranking players based on the number of Super Bowl rings. Right. I mean, don't tell me that Eli Manning is in the same solar system because he has two Super Bowls and Rodgers has one or even of his brother.
Yeah. Because if you think about that, I mean, it's, you know, think about the Super Bowl with the helmet catch against the Patriots or they beat the NBA. The play before, Eli threw it right to Asante Samuel, one of the great DBs in NFL, and he dropped it. Yeah, the very play before. Yeah. This is Asante Samuel.
Yeah. I love that commercial that the Mannings are now doing where Peyton goes, well, I probably would hit him in the numbers.
Oh, those are so good.
But whatever.
Those are so good. this is an aside. This is one of my favorite Asante Samuel stories. Okay, so he's playing for the Eagles at the end of his career. Still very... very good player, you know, known for his ball hawking. So he's sitting out practice with some minor injury, and it's a drill where one wide receiver is matched against one defensive back. So Asante's just standing there, you know, and literally as the receiver is taking one step, he's calling out the pattern. And it's like he's doing this again and again and again. And it just says to me, this is the level. I mean, you know, maybe they're not like, you wouldn't call them like academically classroom, but these guys are so smart about their profession.
Yeah, that's right.
And the kicker to the story was like, so finally one of the offensive coaches goes, well, how do you know this? And he goes, I got the 411 on all y'all over there. And it just spoke to me just about the level of football IQ these guys have. They're the best.
That is amazing. And people would probably not really believe that or be dubious about that. But that's true. Mm-hmm. Even stuff like if you knew all the stuff that punters think about, I bet that would really be interesting. All the stuff that they and special teams guys, the gunner on
I was when the Eagles were still in training camp at Lehigh. I was watching Sean Moore. He was a gunner, and they were doing a drill. He's got two guys lined up over him, and just the many different ways he had defeating that.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes he would cut really sharply inside. Other times he'd take a jab step to his left and go between them. It was just incredible to me just how much goes into that.
Pass rushers.
Yeah.
Is another one.
Yeah.
We could probably have a guy like whoever. Who's the guy that was on the Rams?
Aaron Donald.
But the guy that used to be on Denver that they got as a free agent.
Von Miller.
Yeah, Von Miller. He could probably sit here and talk for 2 hours about all these moves that he makes and all the instincts that he has. And it's this thing that happens in 2 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, speaking of that, I mean, that's one of the frustrating things about our profession. It's like when people say to us, well, you wouldn't understand. But then every now and then you get it in the right situation where they will explain it to you. And it's like the best interview ever because you do. Suddenly, your eye—it's like your brain is just opened up.
A lot of those guys, in the right situation, probably would love to talk about that.
I think so.
They probably love to. But it's tough to, given the modern realities of covering a team, it's tough to get that.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
I think we love it, of course, and they would probably love it too.
I think on some level, yeah, depending on time and depending on if you have some publicist standing over your shoulder and saying one more.
Yeah,
I hate that.
Yeah, yeah. George Will, I don't know. This was now probably in the 90s, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know this. He wrote a book called Men at Work.
I read it.
About the craft of baseball. It was Tony La Russa. It was Cal Ripken talking just about playing shortstop. And it was a gargantuan bestseller. It was one of the most successful sports books ever. I think people love that. We love doing it.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of cases the players. Tony Gwynn would probably talk about hitting until he passed out, you know.
He did. He was known for that.
Yeah.
Well, I remember the Ripken stuff because he was talking about how he always looked in to see what pitch was called.
Yeah.
And how if it was a breaking ball, for instance. Well, in the way I remember him saying it in that book was, then I'd go sprinting my right, which is probably not actually sprinting virtue, but it is, you know, favoring that because you figure the guy's going to pull the ball into the shortstop third base hole.
If you watched him, he did that all the time.
Yeah.
I went to Orioles games a few times and just watched him for a couple innings, and he did that all the time. Like Ozzie Smith could probably do things athletically. Of course he could. It was acrobatic, but Ripken was constantly doing that. You know.
Yeah. It was a fascinating thing. Basketball wise, there was a book Chris Ballard wrote called The Art of the Beautiful Game, and he had Steve Nash.
You gave me that book, by the way. I still have it, yeah.
Steve Nash, there's a chapter on Steve Nash, there's a chapter on Kobe. The chapter on Kobe was funny because he said that when he was at Lower Marion, he played one of Lower Marion's subs in practice, one-on-one full court every day,
to
100.
Yeah.
And Ballard interviewed the sub, I forget his name, and he said, "Well, I got 5 one time," and Kobe said, "I don't think so."
That's Kobe.
And the other one was about Nash. When he went to Santa Clara, he was a lightly recruited guy out of Canada, and he had all kinds of problems bringing the ball up against some guy from Santa Clara.
Yeah, I remember that.
And the way it was described in Ballard's book was Nash didn't get upset or frustrated, but he was very, as you can picture Nash being Nash, very analytical about, well, how can I defeat this guy? And of course,
he figured it out.
I think we can safely say he
nailed it. Nailed it. Yeah. It is amazing how just almost the capacity for boredom that you have to have to grind on this little stuff. I know when I played basketball, there were guys that I played against that I was like, I could never get the ball up the court against this guy. Right. He might foul me, but I could never get the ball up the court. Dave Moyer, a guy I played with Sam Bowie for London. I've played against him a few times. I'm like, don't give me the ball because this dude's guarding me, and we're not going to get a shot, you know. But to figure that, I'm figuring that out.
Yeah.
For Steve Nash, it was like, I'm figuring that out. For Mike Gross, it wasn't. I'm figuring it out. No, I ain't figuring it out. But
but
he might have had a little more athletic ability.
Maybe just a little. But it is interesting to me. It's an overused phrase to say football IQ, baseball IQ, whatever. But there is a lot to it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, when you get to that level, and for the most part, everybody's on the same plane athletically. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it does come down to that part of it a lot.
Yeah. And it's. Being able to figure out the right thing and then being able to grind on it over and over and over and over to get there.
Nash was a really interesting guy when he was in his heyday with the Suns, and how he would do things. Like he was from Canada, but he had a background in soccer. He was actually born in South Africa, and he would do this thing where, like Gretzky would do, where Gretzky would go behind the net, where he'd like dribble under the hoop and just to see what his options were. Not looking to shoot, but looking to see what the geometry of the court told him.
You see that a lot now. That would have been, I don't want to say he invented that because somebody will say, no, what about Bob Cousy or
Slater Martin.
Slater Martin. The Slate Man. Bring it. But I mean, he's the first guy I remember doing that as a practice, as a conscious thing.
Yeah. And I remember when Brett Brown coached the Sixers, and he would often make references to when he was an assistant with the Spurs, and he would talk about how you could never do the same thing twice defending Nash on the pick and roll. Like sometimes you had to blitz him, other times you had to play drop coverage, other times you had to switch, whatever. Because if you did the same thing twice in a row, he would dice you up.
Yeah, yeah.
So
he was an amazing guy to watch.
Yeah,
and it's so interesting that he played that he was a big soccer guy because there is that constant flow to the way he played.
Yeah,
just keep going. Another guy who didn't play soccer, who had the same quality to me when I watched him play, was Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Very similar in that sort of sense of we're just rolling and we're just processing data and rolling through the game, you know?
That's right. And they were teammates, Nash and Kidd.
That's right.
At the very beginning of Nash's career, he was the third string guy. I think Kevin Johnson was still around when he got drafted by the Suns originally.
He could play.
Yeah, a little bit. So anyway, do we want to say anything more about Russell Wilson getting traded or Carson Wentz getting traded?
Wentz is interesting to me because the Colts giving up on him, and after this whole thing with Andrew Luck, and this seems to me like a pretty good football team other than the quarterback position, and they've been pretty good for a while, and maybe I'm a homer, but I really believe that Frank Reich is a very good coach.
Yeah, I think so.
Talk about a smart guy.
Yeah.
And for him to give up on
this,
which he must have signed off on this, right? And he clearly wanted him there just, what, a year ago?
Yeah, and if he can't fix him, who the hell can?
That's right. That's right.
So
what's wrong?
I mean, the reports you read are that physically he has the ability, but he doesn't respond to coaching clearly, and he's not a leader. Those are the two knocks on him, and those are the things that went back to the end of his tenure in Philadelphia.
I think that's right. Doesn't take coaching well, and he's not a leader. I think that's probably what it is. And there were moments, there were stretches this year in games that I saw them play where I thought he was terrific.
And then you have the
times when he was horrendous. And at the very end,
when they really needed to win,
against
Jacksonville, the worst team in the league,
he
can't happen.
Completely lost his fastball.
That just can't happen. So that's a really
he is a curious case.
Yeah, because he was. For a couple years with the Eagles, even the year they won the Super Bowl, he was really good that year until he got hurt.
And you thought he was going to be
the guy
for 10 years and a guy in the top shelf, maybe not at the Rodgers level, but a guy that would be on that top shelf.
Competent for years to come. He would be like the guy you could hang your hat on. And it's like, you're not going to have to worry about that position. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're really in flux, the Eagles. It's really a crazy turn of events with how that. So, who gets a worse response, Ben Simmons tonight or Carson Wentz whenever the Commies play at the Eagles?
The aptly named Commies. Ben Simmons.
The answer
to that question is Ben Simmons.
Even though he's not playing tonight, and I just hope that it's not like super ugly. That it's just sort of like, okay, let's boo the guy and move on.
Yeah, boo the guy and move on because he's just. I'm surprised that if he's not going to play, he just wants to sit there.
Yeah,
but maybe,
I am too.
Maybe he thought, well, I'll look like a real pussy if I don't show up.
Some truth in that.
Maybe, I don't know.
But anyway, I'm
looking forward to that game, though. I'm looking forward to Nets and the Sixers tonight in Philly.
It's funny because until they made the trade for Harden, I really didn't watch the Sixers much at all this year. And now it's sort of appointment viewing because, I think, Harden is Harden and Embiid is Embiid. But Tyrese Maxey really kind of excites me. You know, he just got this energy about him. The way, just for starters, I think he might be one of the fastest guys with the ball in his hands that they've ever had.
He can motor.
I mean, there's Iverson, of course. He's in a class, right? Yeah. But I mean, other than that, I mean, who is faster than Tyrese Maxey?
And when Iverson was at his peak, teams were so focused on stopping him, and that's not going to be the case for Maxey. Yeah. Maxey is going to be able to really make it happen. Remember when people were talking about this trade? Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, what's this going to mean for Maxey? Well, it's working out okay for the dude.
It's really interesting to me because I thought he was going to be reduced to a spectator while Harden did what he did in Houston. But obviously, it's not that at all. He's actually like really unleashed him and really explored the full extent of his abilities.
Now, here's a couple things about this. One, they clearly at this point are just at almost the elementary level of what they can be offensively, which is incredibly impressive.
Right.
Are they going to push to the next level? Because there's a lot more they can do with Embiid and Harden and pick and roll and involving others and Harden really does. He has a high basketball IQ.
Oh yeah.
In addition to his tremendous talent, he really does.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think I for one got too fixated about the Houston phase of his career where he was just.
I hated the way he
played. Oh, God. I hated the way they played. It was unwatchable.
That might have been D'Antoni more than it was Harden.
Maybe so.
I don't know.
Which is surprising because D'Antoni, when he had Nash, look at what they were the most appealing.
The most fun team to watch.
Yes. Man, that was unwatchable.
That is weird. Yeah. That is very strange. It was almost like he took this spread offense thing to another level where. Four guys are just not going to move, and that nobody wants to watch that.
Maybe part of it was, you know, besides Nash, he had Amari Stoudemire. Talk about the ideal pick and roll guy. When he was at the peak of his game, he was a monster.
Really good fit with Nash. Yeah. He was a great fit with Nash. Maybe he didn't appreciate it enough at the time.
Yeah,
nationally,
that was perfect.
And the other thing I was going to say that concerns me here is when they get into the playoffs and they get deep into the playoffs. And the two guards on the floor are Maxey, who's 6'2", although very athletic, and Harden, who's big enough, but not Scottie Pippen.
Correct. Yeah, that's a concern.
That's a concern.
So you wonder who exploits that. Maybe Miami, because they have some bigger guards and some pretty explosive guys.
Now, did you see? I don't know. Phoenix took them apart.
Yes.
Phoenix
without Chris Paul.
Phoenix is the best basketball team in the world right now.
Yeah. And it's like every time I see Michael Bridges play.
You start to grumble, don't you, big guy?
Yeah. How could you not? I mean, because he's getting better.
He is getting better. Yeah. He's getting really
every year
getting
he gets better.
I thought that, is it Johnson? Who's the shooter with the afro?
Cam Johnson.
Yeah,
He's a good player.
I thought he was almost maybe usurping Bridges a little bit late last year and into the playoffs, but not now.
No.
Not now. And Bridges is a better athlete and a more complete player, a stronger guy. Yeah,
and I really like him. And I like their depth, I think. And
they have a center.
Yeah.
An actual center that you can throw the ball into.
Yeah, and they have greater overall size than they had last year, which is they were really lacking it when they played Milwaukee.
A little bit better bench and more options. Yeah. They're the best team right now.
So here's a little side note to that. I mean, for a while, the Warriors and them were close. Now the Warriors are like 7 games behind them, and they're Draymond Green is supposed to come back Monday, which is really big for them. And Andre Iguodala and James Wiseman apparently are coming back. But I look at their team and I wonder how they're going to organize their rotation after Curry, Thompson, Draymond, maybe Wiggins, maybe Jordan Poole. But then, and you got to play Looney and Wiseman a little bit just because of the matchups. But then after that, they have a bunch of guys who can do some things. But I don't know how. I mean, Kerr's got to figure this out. And usually your rotation gets shorter in the playoffs, but. You know,
I don't think they can win it.
I don't think
I just don't think
it doesn't feel that way.
It almost feels like push the can down the road another year because I don't think Thompson is himself.
No, not quite.
Thompson is not the physical strong presence, the defender.
No.
I mean, Jordan Poole and him are pretty close, really. And Wiseman, how are you going to get a lot from him?
I don't know.
Great talent, and I'm very intriguing. It'll be interesting to see what he becomes, but he basically hasn't played for a year and a half. Maybe not a year and a half, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It'll change a lot when Draymond Green gets back. Maybe we appreciate him more now
I think not only from the defensive standpoint, but also just about how he creates shots for Curry and Thompson, because he's kind of their de facto point guard.
Yeah, right. I was just going to say that. Curry is in some ways a point guard, but in some ways really not.
Right.
He's a unique guy, especially because of what he does. Oh, moving without the ball.
Oh, my God. He's incredible.
He's really good at that.
His conditioning must be amazing.
Yeah,
I'd love to see what his workouts
are. It is.
I mean, everybody shows up early to watch his pregame workouts. What are his off-season workouts like?
Did you see that? I know. And supposedly, he fixed it. Remember, he had a lot of ankle problems early in his career?
Yeah.
Supposedly, he fixed that with powerlifting type stuff. Deadlifting.
Really?
And I read a long piece about that. It was great, about deadlifting and all this stuff that he did to sort of fix that. It was almost like a physiological fix, which you don't. That's
for him, because he really, that was one of the really big concerns about him early in his career, if he could hold up, and he's obviously held up pretty well.
Did you see that video of him doing a shooting routine recently? It was just like last week.
I don't think I did.
He's standing like a stride inside the foul line, and he just throws the ball underhand, up in the air, swish. He steps back to the foul line. He's working with a coach, you know, throws him the ball, swish. He moves back to the top of the key, swish. He keeps going back 5 feet, swish, swish, till he gets to the circle, the mid-court circle, 40 feet from the basket. He makes two in a row.
Underhanded.
No, these are all, only the first one was underhanded.
Okay.
Every one of them, swish, 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 makes two in a row from 40 feet, and then reverses it, goes back in, up 5 feet, up 5 feet, up 5 feet, makes the foul shot, and then does this again, throws it underhanded again, swish.
I there are a few things I enjoy more than watching him play. he's just I mean, he hasn't had a really good year by his standards.
Yeah, and he hasn't shot the ball great by his standards. It's but like what he can do.
Yeah. So I do think that part of that is related to not having Draymond, because Draymond creates a lot for him just with his passing and his, speaking of, you know, basketball IQ again. There's a Draymond Green. His IQ is
really
off the
charts. Really got a good feel for it.
It's like, to watch him play defense and how he understands what's in front of him and what's unfolding, it's pretty incredible.
That the whole thing of the geometry of the game.
Yeah.
And also using his body. He really is good at using his body to sort of minimize. A lot of times he has a quickness mismatch or a size mismatch because of the people he has to guard.
Right.
And he's something.
Yeah. He's a very interesting, and maybe as unusual player as there has ever been in the league.
Yeah, he's a unique.
Considering he's 6'7", really, and you know, he's really arguably a Hall of Famer just by what he brings to the game. I mean, if you're looking at his numbers 20 years from now, you're saying, oh, well, that guy's just an ordinary. No, not really. He was kind of the difference for them.
That's right. Dave DeBuscher comes to mind.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mean, he's not as good a passer, I don't think. I don't think he's as good a passer as Draymond is, but. Yeah, one of those guys that
very unusual player. Yeah. So I'll be curious to see, you know, what they become when they get their guys back. Because Iguodala is another guy that really kind of facilitates what they do and can guard guys. You know, for instance, they got burned twice within a week by Luka Doncic. Now Iguodala is a guy that you can trust against Luka. You know what I mean?
And you used to be able to trust Klay Thompson.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's. That may come. It's still, but maybe, it's not there now.
But he was out for a long time. He missed two whole seasons.
He was out for, and he somehow looks a little bit less athletic to me. Maybe it's the headband. I mean, please, with that headband. But it's like Gabe Cotter.
Wow, Mr. Cotter.
I don't know why Mr. Cotter didn't wear a headband. I don't know what that means, but there it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope the Warriors. I like the Warriors. They're a lot of fun.
I
hope they can figure it out. But I mean, would you pick them over Memphis now?
I mean, and think about that.
No.
If the playoffs were to start today, they'd have to beat Memphis and Phoenix just to get to the finals.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's doing that.
That would really be tough.
Because I mean, John Morant. This has really been his coming out. There's a guy. I mean, people have kind of compared him to Iverson, but he's actually probably more athletic than Iverson was, you know, as far as what
he is unbelievably athletic.
And fearless. I mean, he's Iverson that way because but Iverson went to go and lay the ball. He wants to dunk on guys, you know, and does.
And he's so the way he like bends his body in the air. I've never seen anything quite like him.
No.
And yet he does all the point guard things. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's not Russell Westbrook in terms of his judgment and point guard skills. I've heard some people say, well, it's crazy to talk about him for MVP. I don't think it is.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. I think he's got to be in the discussion somewhere. I mean, I think Embiid's going to win it, but I think maybe Jokic has had just as good a year this year as last year. With less help, he's had just as good a year.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and speaking of that, that's kind of a wild card in the playoffs because Denver's going to get Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray back, and they might be like a sixth seed. So that's something else to think about.
Yeah.
If whoever finishes third, you know, be it the Warriors or Memphis, they might end up with Denver in the first round.
And Denver
that's no bargain.
Denver seems a little dangerous. They do. And, you know, here's another thing. The Celtics look like they figured it
out. Oh my God, have they? Yeah, Jason Tatum. There's
he's
a guy.
Something. He's something here. There's a guy that will get an MVP vote or two. I would think.
I would think so too.
If he keeps rolling the way he is right now, I mean, we're talking about when he's really rolling at this moment.
But. So that's a very interesting thing to me, just how these teams are coming down the stretch, because the Warriors are kind of leaking oil and the Celtics are really soaring.
The Celtics, to me, 6 weeks ago looked like they're going to blow it up at the end of the year.
And that's not – and you know who's actually played really well for them? Our old friend Al Horford.
Yeah. All of a sudden, what happened there?
I don't know.
Ponce de Leon with the Fountain of Youth? I mean, they're defending at an elite level right now. The Celtics
and he's part of it.
And then, they couldn't be doing it without a guy like that. Yeah.
So our podcast might be the only one where we mention Bruce Springsteen and Ponce de Leon. So
take it to the bank. Take it to the bank, my friend.
So the other little rumor that's emerged NBA-wise this year or this week is noted media person Andrew Bogut reported on a podcast that he has heard that Bradley Beal this coming offseason wants to go to Philadelphia. So my question is, first of all, Andrew Bogut.
Take it to the bank.
Secondly, would that mess the Sixers up in some respect?
It's funny because I saw some tweets after that report came out that were like, well, that's it. Cancel the playoffs. If they get Bradley Beal, the Sixers are sweeping everybody. It's over. I think they could make that work, but I don't know. I don't know. And then you really wonder what happens to Maxey.
I think I'd let him develop. And let's not forget Tyrese Maxey, 21st overall pick. I mean, we ripped the Sixers, and justifiably so, for some of their really poor draft decisions.
That was a great one.
That really ranks up there as one of their best all-time picks.
And honestly, I saw him play a couple times in college. I didn't really notice him.
Interesting.
I mean, I saw Kentucky play, I don't really remember seeing him play in college. Now, Kentucky, you know, they always have great athletes.
Yeah.
But, that was a great one.
Yeah, he's
the 21st pick is usually, let's just find a guy who can be on a roster, honestly.
Yeah, right.
Maybe a little, that's a little harsh, but you know what I'm saying.
Often that's the case. Yeah, it's just a guy like, well, maybe he'll be at the end of our bench or on our G League team or whatever.
Yeah, the NBA draft is effectively very, very, very short. Mm-hmm. If you get a guy that deep into it that's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, usually between, like, post-lottery till pick 40-something, you can pretty much throw all those names in the hat.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
But,
there are a few exceptions.
They got one there, for
they
sure.
Did. Did.
So, I mean, speaking of Andrew Bogut, and I mentioned this before we start, at one point, you know, because I have no life, I was compiling a list of ghost Sixers from the Sam Hinkie era, guys that they traded for, veterans, and they immediately cut them.
This is just from Hinkie.
Just from the Hinkie era. All right. They, you know, because that was so weird. You know, it's like, let's get 100 second round picks.
Yeah.
It was always like that. So they would make these trades, bring in a veteran, and immediately cut them. So I called them the Ghost Sixers because they were actually part of their team, but not really.
I got the category.
Andrew Bogut, Danny Granger, Andre Karolenko. There were several others. Sasha Khan was one that I remember.
Sasha Khan. Danny Granger, boy, I really forgot about him.
Yeah. So, but it's just so interesting, just that whole era, just because it was so, you know, under normal circumstances, you say, they got Andrew Bogut. Well, he could play a couple minutes for them, but no, he's not even going to be here.
And you will probably hear Hinkie files who would argue, well, they turned Hinkie's stuff into Joel Embiid and James Harden.
ultimately true.
Which is ultimately true, but a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I mean, they went through a lot.
Yeah, sort of an indirect route to James Harden. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so they are there, and you can't deny that they are a formidable team now. It's really a very interesting team to watch.
Another guy that, when I saw him play in college, I didn't see it. It was James Harden.
Yeah.
When he was at Arizona State, I thought, this is like a heavy-legged sort of. It reminded me of Kenny. Who was the guy from Louisville? That was
Kenny Payne.
It reminded me of him a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying he was more skilled than Kenny Payne, but that sort of body type, you know. This guy's sort of heavy, and he's sort of tweener size, and What's he going to be? I don't see explosiveness. How did I break that down?
So far in our pod, we've had Ponce de Leon, Bruce Springsteen, and Kenny Payne. Did not see that coming.
And Jasper the Wonder Dog.
And Jasper the Wonder Dog. Yeah, well, that goes without saying. He deserves to be mentioned.
So, setting a position of after the buzzer.
So I think on that note, maybe we'll say goodbye for this week. I think, Mike, unless there's anybody else you want
to... No, I'm good. I like this format. We should maybe do this. Our guests, as wonderful as our guests have been, and we're certainly not going to get away from having guests.
No.
Maybe once in a while we should do this. Yes. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, you don't want to make any Magellan references or anything like that? Well,
no, but let me tell you this. If you want to talk Vasco da Gama, I'm here for you.
Exactly. And who doesn't?
All right, gang. That's it. It's been fun. He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See you later.
See you later.